From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 24th day of July 2015. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Fake. She's at Stewart Peterson right here in Champaign County. We'll take a look at the agricultural weather forecast with Andy Schaefer of the Andersons out of their Everly, Iowa facility, and check in on the weather forecast, too. That with not only Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey, but also with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City on this Friday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
This is the July 24 edition of the Closing Market Report. Jackie Vakes is here from Stewart Peterson to take a look at the agricultural marketplace. Jackie, thanks for being with us this afternoon. This is the last trading day for the August options. What does that mean?
Well, it usually complicates trading a little more than normal. But today what it meant was anybody who was holding a 990 call in August, if they didn't get out of it, they were now long beans at 990. And so they hung the 990 calls. Now we're off, and the next thing will be September, which will be at the end of August. And so, you know, it just makes things a little more complicated. I think when you look at today's trading day, this, you know, we closed out a really rough week this week, Todd. I'm telling you, in December, we had the largest weekly loss in the last year, since a year ago in July, of 28.5 cents. December wheat had the largest weekly loss also in a year, 43.75 cents. And November beans had their largest weekly loss since January, which was 41.75 cents. So, you know, there's no question this is concerning from the standpoint, you know, we've got some real major support points here. I think, you know, $4 is still psychological support in December. 381 is major support. 427 is major resistance. I could see us trade between those between now and the August report. On November beans, I was hoping like crazy 971, which was a 50% retracement of our last move, would hold, but it didn't. And we closed at that 965 level. So support's at 953, resistance is at 10.010. And on wheat, well, you know, we just had a lousy situation all the way around. So we've been below all the majors in wheat, and 510 is the support, 575 is resistance. So there's a lot that can happen this next week. But I still think, like we talked this morning, you know, we have Brazilian farmer selling that has come in very strong the last couple of days because of the rise in the dollar. We have more talk about perhaps some better weather, you know, more beneficial weather. You know, I think that, to be truthful, that's what makes something like a wet weather rally so difficult to deal with. You know, we've talked about it before. You don't know what's going to happen. And so I went and I did a little bit of research, and I took last week's crop ratings for Illinois, Indiana, Missouri, and Ohio, and I compared them to prior years. And then I took and looked at what their three-year production average was. And I used 09, 10, and 11 because 12, 13, and 14 are all kind of goofy years. So I wanted to kind of get 09's questionable too, I suppose. But I took their averages for that. Then I took Minnesota, North Dakota, Nebraska, and South Dakota, which is, you know, we keep hearing how good the crops are there, and did the same thing with them. And basically it says, you know, in contrast to what you would expect from that three-year average, we'd probably produce about 197 million bushels less in Illinois, Indiana, Missouri, and Ohio. And between Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota, Nebraska, we'd produce about 61 million bushels more, which is still a negative of 135 million bushels. Now let's take Iowa. And I did the same thing with Iowa, looked at its crop ratings, did the three-year average. And if indeed they do come in where they are, because remember, they're at 13.7 million acres this year on corn, in contrast to Illinois at 11.8. And they'd actually bring in an extra 191.8 million, which would give us a positive 56.1 over those nine states. Now, you know, that represents about 63.4 million acres. So, you know, we still have, what, 26? What are we at? Mm-hmm. We're at 88.9, you know, so 25.5 million acres bring in about a 10 billion bushel crop. So, you know, can those other acres do that? I haven't gotten far enough to really look to see once if they can. But I think it's interesting, and I think this is what the trade is beginning to look at, too. They're saying, boy, we just really don't know. And if the crop ratings would improve again, next week. Well, they didn't improve, but we did move a little bit more up to excellent. But if they would improve, that probably justifies what they were doing, and it was magnified by the Brazilian selling.
Right. Okay, so, and you mentioned the Brazilian selling this morning, and farmers understand this, but Brazilian farmers are in the midst of making sales. We're in the middle of their winter time. I guess they're making winter sales, although that seems unusual for them. I thought they moved a little bit sooner than this. They've been holding, I guess, waiting, and now are they really beginning to put a lot of grain and oil seeds on the marketplace? Is this something unusual over the recent years in your experience? And I know we've only got a decade or so of experience with the Brazilians in particular for soybeans.
Well, you know, when you look at the big picture, the Brazilian farmer was doing exactly what the U.S. farmer was doing. They had many less sales on the books for their new crop than what they should have had. And now they've got, in beans in particular, they've got 440 million bushels more approximately, total down there between Argentina and Brazil. And so I think that, you know, they have a much different circumstance than we do, too. Remember that, you know, their currency is getting weaker. They still have to buy inputs. And all of a sudden, and when it comes to the banking facilities down there, they still do not lend money for inputs. They don't use grain as collateral like we do in the United States. And you can understand why, because of the spoilage potential and everything else. And so it's pretty difficult for them. So, you know, they're going to have to make some sales to be able to have the money to be able to do things. And especially when you look at like Argentina, where they put so many restrictions on them, and the Brazilian farmer himself too. You know, some of the lending principles are totally different. Neither of those countries are in good shape economically, Argentina being worse than Brazil. But don't think Brazil is great either. And so, you know, to think that the government's going to come up and give them some big help, I don't think is extremely likely. So what choice do they have? You know, it kind of goes back to the old days. Remember, Todd, in the old days, we could almost tell you when corn price was going to go down because it was when farmers needed money to buy seed and fertilizer.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, that's kind of the same thing down there.
Well, I was wondering about that as to the old days, and I mentioned the commercials and asked you that this morning as to whether they were buying or not on the marketplace, if they were in the market, whether they were supporting it or not, and wondering whether this might be more like the old days where we get to the end of July and the market just dumps for a while and then we turn sometime in August, just prior to harvest, and begin to move upward.
Well, I think that, you know, that's very, very likely, especially when, you know, you talk to like the guys, you talk to guys in Nebraska, Iowa, there's places out there that aren't even taking any corn because they're so full. And they're so backed up. They've had so many people who sold on the move higher, and they just don't have the need for it. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, and why would a commercial be buying if that's the case? He doesn't need to be buying. And so, you know, it could definitely weaken after this unless we get something really exciting on the August report. And the big question, I guess, and everybody who's listened has heard me say this how many times, are we going to rally? Yeah, I believe we're going to rally, but where from? That's the question you have to ask yourself. You know, are we going to rally from here? Are we going to rally from 20 cents lower than here? What's it going to be? And, you know, the one thing we know is as much of a friend as the funds have been to us to the upside, they'll be that big an enemy to the downside. You know, it's money movement. It's not anything else. And so if suddenly it looks like we have very little news coming in that's positive, they'll take the short side for a while. Doesn't make a difference. So they'll push it lower than it should go.
Hey, speaking of movement, China, state reserve corns, they're looking to try to sell.
They really are. And, you know, their latest reserve sale was a huge disappointment. They only sold like 2.4% of what they offered. And you know, this is interesting, too, and I think all of our guys need to think about this. In the month of June, China had record imports of corn, sorghum, DDGs, and they had the second highest record of barley imports. And we didn't participate in it very much because we were rallying at the time. So the state stocks still remained very, very high, Todd. And so I'm thinking there might be more subsidies coming. You know, a number of weeks ago we talked about 82 cents a bushel. They didn't do it. $1.64, they didn't do it. They're still not doing it. So if, you know, China raises about a 9 billion bushel corn crop, if they, you know, if they want to get these reserves emptied, they're going to have to go like crazy to do it. And, you know, that's not being helped by, they culled 11 million head of their pork in the last year and a half, which is nearly twice the size of the U.S. pig herd, can you imagine, as of June 1st of this year. That's how much they culled in the last year and a half. So that's less pigs eating, too. And then you add to that manufacturing information that was, it was the worst that we've seen in the last 15 months. So, you know, when it comes to funds wanting to be involved here, outside money wanting to be involved, anytime investors get nervous, it doesn't do a really good thing for us.
All right. Hey, thanks so much for taking the time with us today.
Thanks, Todd. Have a great weekend.
You too. That is Jackie Vake. She's with Stuart Peterson. Joins us on this Friday afternoon. A couple of items. The cattle and feed inventory or cattle inventory report was out at the top of the hour. All cattle and calves in the United States as of the first day of July totaled 98.4 million head. That's 2% above the 96.3 million on July 1, the last time all cattle and calves inventory for July 1st increased was on 2006, so quite some time ago. Here's what the agricultural news looks like for this Friday afternoon. Yesterday, the United States House of Representatives passed a voluntary GMO labeling bill, and in the Senate, a voluntary country of origin meat labeling bill was introduced. The House, along party lines, passed GMO voluntary labeling after turning back a handful of Democrat-led amendments to weaken or gut the bill, backed by some 500 farm and food groups. Democrats argued consumers have the right to know and want to know if their food contains GMOs. Republicans countered that mandatory state labeling laws upend interstate commerce, and those labels scare consumers. House Agriculture Committee Chairman Mike Conaway argued GMO safety has been documented by the world's leading scientific and public health groups.
Biotechnology is an essential tool for farmers in our food supply to have the toolbox. And if we plan to feed the estimated 10 billion people in the year 2050 in an environmentally sound, sustainable, and affordable way, they must be used.
Conaway argues the GMO program is modeled after USDA's successful organic program that's market-driven. Agriculture Biotechnology Subcommittee Chairman Rodney Davis of Illinois opposed Democrats' attempts to scuttle the bill's requirement for FDA rulemaking for natural GMO foods.
This will allow for an open, transparent, public process so that the FDA can establish such standards based on the facts, the science, and the input received. This amendment would predetermine that outcome and not allow for a science-based, fact-driven process.
A voluntary GMO labeling bill is also in the works in the Senate, speaking of which, it Thursday focused on another labeling bill to change mandatory country of origin meat labeling, ruled WTO illegal four times, to a voluntary system. Democratic co-sponsor and former Senate Agriculture Chair Debbie Stabenow claims majority bipartisan support on the committee.
I've had no one say to me they're absolutely opposed. So we're in a situation where, you know, we all prefer our own approaches, but nobody has said they're absolutely opposed, and everybody wants to solve the problem. And when we look at the votes in the Senate, this is the way to solve it.
But Stabenow's approach, despite bipartisan support, is opposed by Agriculture Committee Chairs Pat Roberts and Mike Conaway. The House swiftly passed full cool repeal last month. Roberts is looking to do the same in the Senate. Elsewhere in Washington, D.C., EPA is extending the comment period on its proposed plan to prohibit the use of all highly toxic pesticides when crops are in bloom and bees are present under contract for pollination services. Initially released on the 29th day of May, the plan also recommends the states and tribes develop pollinator protection plans and best management practices. The 30-day extension ends August the 28th and will be announced in the Federal Register. Well, a new procedure devised by USDA Department of Agriculture scientists to extract lunacin from soybean seeds could expedite further studies of this peptide for its cancer-fighting potential and other health benefits. Unfortunately, obtaining sufficient amounts of lunacin has been a costly, time-consuming, and laborious affair. This, in turn, has impeded lunacin's investigation in large-scale animal and human clinical trials. Now, however, the Agricultural Research Service, known as the ARS, reports it's developed a fast new procedure for extracting lunacin in amounts suitable to conduct these trials. And finally today, Winfield Solutions is partnering with Fair Oaks Farms in Fair Oaks, Indiana, to create the Winfield Crop Adventure. Set to open in the spring of 2016, the exhibit will inform visitors about science, agronomic practices, and technologies that shape modern farming. According to the Food and Agricultural Organization of the United Nations, global food production must increase by 70% to feed the projected population of 9.1 billion people in 2015. The Winfield Crop Adventure will share modern agriculture story with people of all ages. As visitors tour the exhibit, they'll learn about not only the history of farming, but today's practices and how agriculture might look in the future. It will join the Dairy Adventure and the Pig Adventure, which are already available to guests of Fair Oaks Farms. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. Have you been to your local county fair this year? There's a pretty good chance that's the case. Did you know in Illinois, the county fairs create about $170 million worth of economic activity? These agricultural celebrations are moneymakers, knitted tightly into the fabric of rural America and its economy. Community and economic development crew at the University of Illinois surveyed fairgoers last summer to get an idea of just how much money they spend and why they go.
Give that ticket to the gentleman right over here.
Entertainment, of course, is high on the list, says Zach Kennedy.
We also found that they were there for anything ranging from doing activities, seeing exhibits. Some folks were there just for the food.
And those folks spend a lot of money. The biggest spenders live in southern Illinois, averaging some $200 a person for the run of the fair. The Northern Illinois fairs, not to be outdone, bring in the most money, almost $100 million. But really, to be honest, going to the fair, well, it's not so much about the money.
The ideas of tradition and unity and educational opportunities rose to the top of some of the things that folks said that the fair meant to them and their family.
The traditions are deep in the social fabric. It's colored with the 4-H clover. The county fair is a time to work hard and play hard with neighbors and friends, and to share those experiences with others. Along the way, in the state of Illinois, the county fairs create 1,000 jobs and something approaching $200 million.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. On this Friday afternoon, Andy Schaefer joins us. He's at the Andersons facility in Everly, Iowa. Andy, thanks for being along. What are conditions like on the ground in your area today?
I would say week on week, Todd, we have gone sideways to backwards. We have not received much rain at all. We have not received any rain this past week, and you know, for the month, we're well below average rainfall. So our crops, we've been in the upper 80s to lower 90s. We need a drink of water. We had a 50% chance of rain today, and we did not get it. And potentially, we could get some showers tonight. I think that chance is still there, but when I look out the window, the sun's trying to shine, so I don't think it's going to rain.
How far into pollination are you?
We're pollinated. I mean, I think we've been pollinating a good week to 10 days. So, I mean, I think if it's a little later planted field, you might be
Stuart
pollinating.
Peterson,
but I'd say on
since
average,
1985,
it's good. We're,
Stuart
we're,
Peterson is offering strategic to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. Information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to Illinois Public Media. The agricultural weather forecasts are next.
This is Jim Angel, state climatologist located at the Illinois State Water Survey at the Bray Research Institute on the campus of the University of Illinois. For July, amounts of 5 to 10 inches were found between East St. Louis, Moline, and points eastward through Peoria and Kankakee, as well as south of Carbondale and parts of the northeast Illinois along the Wisconsin border. Of course, that is well above average and comes in on the heels of the record wet weather in June. Most of the rest of the state has received 2 to 5 inches. There are even a few small areas with less than 2 inches of rain in southern Illinois and in the northwest corner of the state. Much of the rest of the Corn Belt has been extremely wet as well. Temperatures have bounced between cool and hot periods in July. Last weekend was several degrees warmer than average, while this week has been cooler than average. Overall, July is 2.9 degrees below average. According to the National Weather Service, we have a warm week ahead in Illinois. Highs up from Saturday through Thursday will range from the 80s in the north to the low 90s in the south. Nighttime lows will be in the 60s in the north and the low 70s in the south, and it will be very humid as well. The best chances of rain are on Saturday and Sunday, with smaller chances during the week. Potential rain amounts could be up to 2 inches in some locations, but is likely to be spotty and not widespread like in past weeks. Looking at the models, it looks like the hot, humid weather will continue into early August.
That, of course, is Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey Prairie Research Institute. Now here's Drew Lerner with his perspective of the forecast.
Forecast is going to continue to be favorable for most of the Midwest. We're going to expect to see a good mix of rain and sunshine take place across the region as we move out over this next 10 days to 2 weeks. The central portions of the plains will see frequent occurrence of showers and thunderstorms that will support summer crop development potentials much better than usual. That includes corn, soybeans, and sorghum, as well as a little bit of cotton that's produced out there in southwest Kansas. Well, in the heart of the Midwest, though, our weather is going to continue to be favorably mixed. Net drying conditions will occur in many areas as we work our way under this ridge of high pressure. The precipitation that occurs is not expected to be widespread, heavy, or very impressive, at least not initially, but we will have a cool front that will work its way through the Midwest at some point as we go through the week next week, and as that takes place, we will see some shower and thunderstorm activity increasing across portions of the Midwest. A strong cool front, though, will come across the Midwest as we go from mid to late week next week. That frontal system will produce some strong to severe thunderstorms and maybe bring some needed moisture to the drier biased areas in the northwestern Corn Belt and eventually bring a chance for rain into the eastern parts of the Midwest as well. The precipitation that occurs will run 1/4 to 3/4 of an inch with some local totals in the 1 to 2 inch range. The greatest precipitation will probably be more in the western part of the Midwest than in the east. Our temperatures will cool down behind that frontal system. We'll look for highs coming back down into basically the 80s as we get to the end of next week, with a few upper 70s possible in some of the northern parts of the region.
Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. He's a regular part of our daily program. You can find him each and every morning at willag.org in the opening market report. That's the opening market report on WILL AG.org.